And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Call Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening. Your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today. Hope you enjoyed your weekend. I know some of you probably had to make some adjustments over the weekend. Some of you avoided church services, felt you had to do that, and some of you undoubtedly were locked down or felt you couldn't really go out. But I hope nevertheless that you had a peaceful time, a joyful time, and I certainly did. We do have a lockdown here in Virginia, but most people, I think, are taking that with a common sense grain of salt and realizing that life must go on, that there's some things that we have to do. I think most people are practicing social distancing. I think most people are trying to wash their hands frequently and keep their hands away from their face and that kind of thing. And I think most people are, to a large extent, isolating themselves, certainly not going into large groups or anything like that. But, you know, the stuff Burke said to avoid going to the grocery store. When I've been to the grocery store, there are plenty of people in there. So I think people realize they've got to get their food. And by the way, I saw the shelves pretty full, too. So apparently the panic of food buying, I don't know whether toilet paper's on the shelves because I haven't had to buy any. But it seems that the panic of trying to buy up everything in the store seems to be over. At least here again, I found the meat shelves at the supermarket were full, and the bread shelves were full. So that's a good sign. But I want to raise three issues with this today. First of all, look, I want to remind everybody, please pray for us. Pray for our network. Pray for our staff. Pray for their families. We are still seeking to operate and give you the best programming possible anywhere in the radio or internet world, and we're dedicated to that. We're committed to that. We're doing our very best to maintain that standard of excellence. But pray for us, and we're praying for you all. We're praying for our listeners because obviously we do this for you, and without you, with what we do doesn't matter. It doesn't have any impact without you. So let's pray for one another, pray for our country, pray for our president, the governors, the mayors, the city councilors, the county boards of supervisors, school boards, all these folks who are in decision-making positions. Let's be praying for them that they will use godly wisdom in what they do and weigh the various factors, not simply react in a knee-jerk way to everything that they hear. Later on, I want to get into conflicting reports about things that we hear. But right now, we'll talk about three things in the program today and get you to respond to all of these. I want to talk about constitutional principles, and I keep coming back to that because, folks, the Constitution really doesn't mean much if it's cast aside in a time of crisis. It is precisely in a time of crisis that the Constitution must be adhered to. And obviously, as I think it was Justice Jackson who famously said, not me, but another Jackson who famously said, the Constitution is not a suicide pact. And I agree with that. I mean, the Constitution doesn't require that we kill ourselves, but nevertheless, it does require that we consistently acknowledge that unlike communist China, unlike Cuba, unlike many countries in other parts of the world, we are a free people. And therefore, attempts to curtail that freedom have to go through a process whereby we, as the sovereigns of the nation, we the people, as the sovereigns of this nation, give our government the authority to issue restrictions that we then all agree with. And when it's not done that way, frankly, folks, it's not constitutional and it's not legal either. We are not governed by edicts of people who happen to hold elective office that we put them in, whose salaries we pay, and whose authority comes from us. We, the people, delegate that authority. And so they don't get to govern us by edict. There is a process. The 14th Amendment says you can't be deprived of liberty or property without due process of law. There is a process that must be gone through, and simply sitting up on your throne, whether it's in a gubernatorial mansion or a mayoral office, and saying, I decree and I declare, it simply doesn't work in the United States of America. And I continue to be troubled that nobody seems to be raising that question. It's almost as if the coronavirus has caused us to completely ignore the Constitution. Like, it just doesn't matter. And when Gavin Newsom says, I do have the capacity to declare martial law, nobody says, well, wait a minute, not under our constitutional system, you don't. No, you don't just have the authority to declare martial law. No, you don't. And if we start setting these kinds of precedents, what's the next crisis in which a bunch of people sitting in high office decide that they can absolutely and completely and totally control the citizenry of our country? So here's one story that popped up. And by the way, you know, once again, folks, I want to commend you all, those of you who are listening to this program. And I know this is not because of me, so I'm not taking credit for it, not one bit. You all were informed long before you ever heard my voice. But I just want to commend you all for the principal positions that our listeners have been taking for the most part, because you all seem to understand what a lot of the elites do not. And by the way, I'm talking about Republicans and Democrats. Just don't seem to understand. I'm talking about conservatives as well as liberals. Just don't seem to understand. Which is that in a constitutional republic, it is precisely in a time of crisis that we must seek to adhere to the Constitution. Or our rule of law, a value, is really nothing. It's a zero. It just doesn't. If it cannot withstand a crisis, then it's not real. It is precisely at a time of crisis. That's when other nations crumble. We don't, because we believe in the rule of law under all circumstances. So we don't degenerate into mobs fighting dog-eat-dog, killing each other in the street and seeing who's going to emerge victorious by the power of the gun. We don't do that in our country, precisely because we are a nation, as I believe John Adams coined over two centuries ago, we are a nation of laws and not of men. But I don't hear that very much. Here's a story that I found very, very troubling. A Pennsylvania woman went out for a drive. Now, the Pennsylvania governor has declared a lockdown, and this woman, 19 years old, went out for a drive. She's been in her house. She lives alone, apparently, and went out for a drive. And two state police cars pulled her over. Now, they said they were pulling her over because she had a broken taillight. Maybe she did. But they asked her where she was going. And she said, I'm just out for a drive. Now, look, by herself, in her car, out for a drive. And they said she could not be out for a drive. They said, you're not allowed to do that because you are failing to abide by the order of the governor and secretary of health issued to control the spread of a communicable disease. Now, how you being out driving in your car alone helps to spread a communicable disease, I do not know. She said, look, I did not get out of my car. I had no intention of getting out of my car. I just wanted to view some scenery other than the four walls of my house. I got in my car and went for a drive. They fined her over $200. And apparently next time, the punishment will be even more severe. Folks, I find that troubling. I find that troubling. And here again, I know these police officers are just following what they think to be orders. But these are precisely the kinds of things that every American ought to be alarmed about. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
Most Christians understand that the problems facing America are not going to be solved in Washington. But it's noteworthy when a sitting U.S. senator says that politics can't solve our political problems. That was the title of a commentary by Senator Ben Sasse. He believes that the tribalism in our nation has a deeper source and is tied to loneliness in America. We are relational beings and want to be in tribes, and he observes that the traditional tribes that have sustained humans for millennia are simultaneously in collapse. Those would be family, friendships, and communities of worship. At the core of this is loneliness in America. This is not a new problem. A quarter century ago, I wrote a book with the title Signs of Warning, Signs of Hope. One of the chapters dealt with a crisis of loneliness. A book we often quote on our radio program is Bowling Alone, written by Harvard social scientist Robert Putnam. He says we no longer are involved in community. We often move and have few friends, and we have few shared projects and belong to fewer civic groups. On the other hand, we don't want to be left out. We don't want to feel like the same isolation we felt at the edge of the cafeteria or as the last kid picked for kickball. So we yearn for a group, often a political ideology, on the basis of our intimate connections. Our cable news tribes offer a common experience. Now, to reverse these trends, we need to read his new book, Them, Why We Hate Each Other and How to Heal. In his commentary, he shares how he and his wife put down roots in a small community and became friends with people from every race and income bracket. We must find ways to replenish the social capital and reverse the tribal conflict in our culture. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
Take Kirby and the Point of View team with you on the go with the Point of View app. Search for Point of View Radio at the Apple or Google Play stores.
Maybe you can relate to this. A lot of people think they're stuck with their health plan. It costs too much, or for whatever reason, they just don't like it. But great news, you are not stuck with it. There is a choice. It's called MediShare, and you could save so much. The typical savings for a family is $500 a month. Major difference maker. This is the affordable alternative to health insurance. And just to give you a little more info about MediShare, it's a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. It's worked beautifully for 26 years, has more than 400,000 members, and they've shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills. So yes, they can help share your needs too. So you're not stuck. There's an excellent alternative. Whether you're single or married, you got a family, MediShare is super flexible. You can choose an option that works for you and start saving lots of money. You can join anytime. They're great to talk to. No pressure. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Brian Fisher here. The president wants America to reopen. I'll tell you how we can do that starting today. In the meantime, police bust up funerals and prayer meetings. Deborah Burke says we must stay home from grocery stores. And there is a glimmer of hope from Italy. What happens when hospitals close? And is it really the coronavirus that's killing us? Next on Focal Point.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Now, as I've said before, folks, the President of the United States wisely issued guidelines, and he's been pressured to issue a lockdown order. But he issued guidelines, not a lockdown order. And I heard one reporter pressing the governor of South Dakota saying, why haven't you issued a lockdown order? And the governor of South Dakota said, look, do you realize there are 10 square miles almost? We have 10 square miles between our citizens. In other words, we have a vast amount of land and we have a small population. It is not necessary in South Dakota. He said, and besides that, we don't need orders. He said, you know, people know what to do. They know how to be responsible, and I don't see any need for orders. So whether you call it guidelines or orders, to me is irrelevant. I would love to have heard him go beyond that. And frankly, I'd love to hear the President of the United States go beyond that and say, well, first of all, because we are a free nation and we live and abide and are governed by the principle of individual liberty, the government doesn't have the inherent authority to order citizens to do anything. All the government can do is seek to persuade citizens. Now, is there any imaginable circumstance in which we might all agree that that would be necessary? Yes, there might be. Is this it? Some of us think it might. Some of us think it's not. Okay, I don't think it is. I don't think it rises to that level. But at the very least, folks, even if we agreed that it rose to that level, there would have to be a process whereby that happens. Let me suggest to you what that process would look like. Either the president or a governor or a mayor would go to the Congress or the state legislature or the city council, respectively, and say, I am asking you all for authority to do X, Y, Z. In this emergency situation, that legislature would have an emergency meeting. This wouldn't have to take long. They would have an emergency meeting to grant the president or grant the governor or grant the mayor certain powers for a temporary period, for a period, say, of 60 days or 90 days, to take the following action to protect the health and well-being of the American people. Now, those people who would be voting on that would be our representatives, and they would be authorizing the executive, also our representative, to take certain action. And then if the American people thought that, okay, that's completely beyond the constitutional boundaries that they've been given, people could go to court, they could seek injunctions, they could ask that the court consider whether, in fact, they have exceeded the bounds of the Constitution or whether they're operating in an overly broad fashion. That might be the case because, remember, fundamental constitutional principles can be regulated, but they can never be regulated in an overly broad fashion. They must always be regulated by the least drastic means with principles or regulatory ideas that are narrowly tailored to meet the specific need. So the governor of South Dakota said, we don't need a lockdown here. I mean, there are too few of us. Fred, too far apart. But notice the tendency toward everybody ought to be locked down. Everybody ought to be locked down. But it's simply not necessary. That to me is overly broad. For the governor of Virginia to lock down Virginia until June 10th is overly broad. I believe that that's patently unconstitutional. Okay, and he has not gone through any legislative process. He hasn't sought the legislature for extraordinary powers to do anything. He's just taken it upon himself to do it and then cited one specious section of the Constitution and another of the Virginia Code, neither of which give him the authority to do what he's doing. And we see what's happened in Pennsylvania, the example I gave of this young lady being stopped, fined, and warned not to be out by herself taking a drive. This is what I mean, folks, by this sort of encroaching infringement upon our most fundamental constitutional rights. And because we're in a crisis, people just say, well, you know, we just need to do that and we just need to be obedient. Well, folks, we do need to be cooperative. And look, this network and I have never counseled you all to do anything other than that. We do need to be diligent and we do need to be responsible. And I've said as Christians, we certainly want to be considerate of our neighbors and considerate of those around us. We don't ever want people to think that we are just recklessly defying any reasonable requests in order to help stave this thing off. We would never want to do that because we want people to live and be healthy and well, and we have compassion and love for our fellow citizens. That's not the issue, though. The issue is how much authority are we willing to cede to the government without it even going through a process to prove that it is lawfully using that authority. And I think that the doing this without going through a proper procedure, a due process, if you will, according to the 14th Amendment, is more dangerous than the virus itself. I believe we can walk and chew gum at the same time. I believe that we can protect our fundamental constitutional rights, and we can deal with this pandemic too. That we don't have to surrender one in order to have the other. Oh, you know, surrender all your constitutional rights because that's what's necessary in order to stop this. No, it's not. No, it's not. And so that's one of my concerns, folks. Now, look, the other thing I said, that's the constitutional principles I'm concerned about. And I'm just waiting to hear some politician say, well, wait a minute, folks, we need to examine the constitutionality of the steps that we are trying to take to deal with this thing and making sure that we are operating within the bounds of the Constitution, because we never surrender our liberty under any circumstances. And don't tell me we can't maintain our liberty and then deal with this crisis as well. I believe that we can do both. Now, the other thing I wanted to raise is conflicts of interest, because I'm not sure you all aware are, well, actually, you know what? Let's deal with these conflicting reports. So you all, finally, hydroxychloroquine. Yeah, I got it. I practiced it. Hydroxychloroquine is being touted as a possible cure. It's a malaria drug, but it's being offered as a cure or treatment for the coronavirus. Now, interestingly, Dr. Fauci debunked that at first. And it turns out, now he's softened his opposition and now come around to saying, well, sure, it's something we ought to try. But there's a great conflict of reports, because some people are saying this is the thing we ought to be pushing out there as fast as we can. And then others, like Fauci, saying, well, we haven't done the epidemiological studies and we haven't done the blind testing and all of that. But I saw Dr. Oz this morning, who was on television, and said, look, no, that's true. We haven't done double-blind studies, and we haven't put it through all of the machinations that the FDA would put it through. But we've treated thousands of people with it. He said, this is not anecdotal. This is not, well, one person over there and one person over there. And yeah, it seemed to work out. He said, from which we could draw no conclusions. He said, but that's not the case here. Thousands of people have been treated with this, and that we are certainly far beyond mere anecdotal ideas about, well, you know, it seemed to work in one place over in Oshkosh, and it seemed to work in another place over in Peoria. He said, no, no, no. We've got a lot more evidence than that, and enough evidence to make it worthwhile to roll this thing out. But others are saying, no, 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 no. And as it turns out, we got a lot of conflicting reports, but as it turns out, Dr. Fauci has a very close relationship with Bill Gates, and Bill Gates has spent a lot of money on vaccines, and Bill Gates is opposed to chloroquine. Interesting, huh? Apparently, Bill Gates gave Dr. Fauci's institute $100 million. And there are indications that Dr. Fauci is dancing not to the president's tune, but to Bill Gates' tune. Now, folks, I realize the president of the United States chose this man, and this man obviously has a lot of medical knowledge, but he doesn't have knowledge of the economy, and he doesn't have knowledge of the Constitution. And these are also, as we're learning, extremely important to the future of our country. And so the fact that he's got this close financial relationship with Bill Gates, who apparently has an interest in, Bill Gates, by the way, favors the complete and total lockdown of the United States of America. Well, you know what? That's easy to say when you're worth $50 billion. When you're worth $50 billion, it's easy to say, lock everything down, lock everybody down, because you won't be affected not one iota. But there are lots of people, millions of people already across this country who are profoundly affected by this. So Bill Gates is in no position to be dictating the medical and scientific decisions that are being made by our country. And if Fauci is listening to Bill Gates and then advising the president on the basis of what Bill Gates is saying, we have a problem. Look, the Health Metrics and Evaluation, Health Metrics and Evaluation Model, the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation Model, predicted that 121,000 Americans would be hospitalized by Sunday. 121,000. Guess what the number is? 31,000. They predicted that 1,700 people in Texas would be hospitalized by yesterday. Guess what the number is? 196. They predicted that Georgia would have 2,800 people hospitalized. Guess what the number is? 952. Is this Bill Gates driven or is this facts driven? Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Weilman.
I went visiting one day to see a family that had attended our church. I was met at the home by a little boy who was about, I'd say 5 or 6 years of age. He told me that his parents were home and then ran inside to tell his mother that that fella from the church is here. Well, once inside, I began a conversation with the mother, and of course it centered around the church. The little boy was real excited about having company, and he kept trying to be a part of the conversation. After we had talked a few minutes, the little boy finally got a question in. "When is that man with a mustache going to be in your church again?" Now, usually I can identify any question a young child is trying to ask, but that one really stumped me. I racked my mind about a man with a mustache. I knew of no one in our church who had a mustache, nor did I know of anyone who had ever been in our church who wore a mustache. I tried to dig a little more information from the child with the hope that I could answer his question. "Which man is that?" I asked. "You know," he said, "the one that talked." Again, I searched my mind and could not remember anyone who had ever talked in our church who had a mustache. I thought of all our church school teachers. None of them had a mustache. I tried to remember all who had preached. I didn't remember any of them having a mustache. I was about to decide that the child was confused when my memory recalled that several months earlier, I did invite a fellow minister of mine to preach at our church, and indeed he did have a mustache. After remembering that a man with a mustache did indeed talk in our church, I knew immediately why it was so difficult for me to identify him as the person the little boy spoke of. You see, the person the child asked about was black. I invited him to preach for me. He was a good friend of mine. But I remembered my friend as a black man, and the child remembered him simply as a man with a mustache. Now, had I been asked, "When is the black man going to be in your church again?" I would have immediately known the person of which the child spoke. The color of his skin would have been my identifying mark. But for the little boy, the major difference in my black friend and the rest of us was not the color of his skin, but the fact that he wore a mustache. Racial prejudice, regardless of which direction it comes from, is something which has to be learned. Little children do not have it until they are taught it. The man from Galilee once said, "The kingdom of God belongs to men who have hearts as trusting as these little children. And anyone who doesn't have their kind of faith will never get into the kingdom's gates." That little child taught me a valid lesson that day, that there are other distinguishing characteristics about a person other than the color of his skin. Maybe one day some of us adults will be able to remember a man by his mustache rather than the color of his skin.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
So I want to get to your calls, share a little bit more information from you and with you, I should say, and then get some information from you. I want to see how you all are doing, what's happening in your communities. The number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. Let me share with you a couple of other numbers. It was projected that by April 1st, Virginia would need 607 beds for hospitalization due to the coronavirus. Guess what the number actually is? 300. They were off by two times the number that actually were needed. In Tennessee, they predicted that 2,200 people would be hospitalized by April 1st. Guess what the actual number was in Tennessee as of April 1st? 200. Not 2,200, 200. And they predicted that New York would need 51,000 beds for hospitalization by April 1st. Guess what the number actually was? 18,000. Now, I know that the numbers themselves are not good. I know that. But they're vastly overstated in terms of what was being predicted. What's driving this? What's driving these gross over-projections? Well, one has to wonder, is it Bill Gates who is pulling the strings on Dr. Fauci and that whole crowd? You know, Dr. Birx came out of the whole AIDS epidemic movement, and she's really imbued with a lot of that philosophy. And you just have to wonder, are these folks acting in the best interests of the country and acting according to the principles that the President of the United States sets forth, or are they acting on the basis of some other principles and values that they hold, driven by lots and lots and lots of money being shared, poured around by Bill Gates? And folks, let's make no mistake. Bill Gates is a leftist. He is a leftist. And look, I'm not introducing politics into this. They have been. From the very beginning, they have been. I mean, Joe Biden accused the president of being racist because the president said, well, the virus came from China. I mean, which is just one of the most preposterous things I have ever heard. It just takes the whole race baiting thing to just a whole new level. Of course it's come from China. As a matter of fact, folks, let me tell you something. We better take very, very seriously the fact that this virus has come from Wuhan, China, a place where they have not one, but two biomedical facilities. I just learned that back in 2015, a report came out of Italy in 2015, now this is 5 years ago, indicating that the world better keep an eye on China because they were involved in biomedical experimentation in preparation for biomedical warfare. Now, folks, that was 5 years ago. And apparently nobody really paid much attention to that. But this is a very real situation that we are facing here. As I've said many times before, I have no hatred for Chinese people. I really don't. I mean, we've got a bunch of Christians in China right now who are under the gun. And I don't mean that figuratively. I mean that literally, because China right now is doing a major crackdown on underground Christian churches. That's the communist Chinese government, I mean, is doing a major crackdown on Christian churches. We don't hate the Chinese people. We love them and pray for them. And as I've said, I feel for them because they are under this brutal dictatorial regime. And God bless them. I mean, I want to see them be free too, but they're not. And the regime that is running China is evil. It is evil. Remember when Ronald Reagan called the Soviet Union an evil empire and all of his advisors, oh, don't say that. Don't say that. In other words, Mr. President, you can't tell the truth. Well, thank God you're going to hear the truth here because very few are willing to say this. But communist dictatorships are inherently evil because they deny the existence of God and set themselves up as God. Here's what this report said in 2015. It was issued in November 2015. It said, it is a group of Chinese researchers attaching a protein taken from bats to the SARS virus, acute pneumonia derived from mice. The output is a super coronavirus that could affect man. It remains closed in laboratories, and it is only for study purposes. But is it worth the risk, creating such a great threat only for examination purposes? Now, that's what China reported. Says, quote, here is an experiment in China in which a group of scientists has managed to develop a chimera, an organism modified by attaching the surface protein of a coronavirus found in bats. Does that sound familiar? 5 years ago. Found in bats of the common species called the great horseshoe bat to a virus that causes SARS in mice, although in a non-fatal form. It was suspected that the protein could make the chimeric hybrid organism suitable for affecting humans. And the experiment confirmed it. Folks, 5 years ago, a report out of Italy about China's biochemical, biological warfare experimentation and the potential dangers of it. And now here we are with this communist Chinese Wuhan virus, the coronavirus, COVID-19. So, folks, let me try to get to your calls because we've just got to take this stuff very, very seriously and not hide our heads in the sand. You know, Ronald Reagan used to say, never be afraid to see what you see. Brian in Arkansas. Brian, welcome.
Hey, good afternoon, young man. Two quick things. You've got a fantastic show today, but I know you got a lot to cover. So just a shout-out to our governor, Asa Hutchinson, here in Arkansas. He obviously doesn't do everything right, neither do I, but he's kept our state open. And I just thank the Lord for that. He's watching our curve and not the curve of New York and San Francisco and Louisiana and all these other places. So I just think he's doing a fantastic job. The second thing is about this potential miracle drug, this malarial drug that they're talking about. If it was acetaminophen or, you know, Tylenol or, you know, some other pill, as far as I'm concerned, it's been around since the 40s, I've heard, or something of that nature. The pill is, or the medicine, I guess, is tried and true. It's not, obviously, it's helped more people than it's ever negatively affected, I'm sure. At least give it a try to the people who, you know, are sick or almost dead or, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
It is, and see if it works. What's it going to hurt? You know what I mean?
Brian, thanks for the call. Look, and here again, from Brian in Arkansas. He probably doesn't have a PhD in chemistry or probably hasn't been to the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. But folks, I mean, it's just common sense. If people are dying and there's a drug that can allow them to live and increase the likelihood that they'll live, why not use it? I mean, it just makes basic sense. But here again, Bill Gates doesn't like chloroquine. Is that why Dr. Fauci has been so reluctant to embrace it? I don't know. Let's go to Fred in Texas. Fred, welcome.
Good afternoon, sir. Two questions. Number one, I agree with social distancing. But number two, as a former attorney, why are the attorneys in these states that are conservatives not taking these governors to task on the issues of the Constitution and their violation of the Constitution? And I'll hang up and listen to your reply.
Well, Fred, you probably know the answer to that as well as I do. You know, think about this, folks. Think about this. How often have you heard politicians, Republican, Democrat, either one, refer to us as a democracy? Well, and we're not. We are not a democracy. Now, we do operate through democratic principles, but we are not a democracy. We are a republic. We have a representative government. That's why we don't elect the president by popular vote. We have an electoral college. That's why we have checks and balances in our system of government so that no one has absolute power, because we're not a democracy. The people can't vote away your First Amendment rights. We can't meet that. You know what? We're going to vote away Brian's First Amendment rights. We don't think Brian should be talking. You can't. We are a constitutional republic which sets limits on government because we believe our rights don't come from government. They come from God. How many of our politicians are aware enough of the nature of our government? I mean, I'd be encouraged if they just stopped calling us a democracy and say, you know, we're a republic. Back in a moment.
What do you think has the most spiritual impact on your youngsters? Devotions, children's church, mealtime prayers, maybe picture Bibles? Would you believe that everyday life has a greater impact? This is Focus on the Family Minute, and here's Phil Vischer, the creator of VeggieTales, talking about how he shared with his kids his daily walk with God.
It was me just on the moment. If I had a thought about God, if I'd learned something about God, if God had done something in my life saying, hey kids, guess what happened to me today? You know, and they admire you. I mean, kids will not walk very far away if they've seen you walking honestly, you know, through their whole upbringing. They still may walk away. It's still going to happen. But you don't go very far when you've seen an honest life changed by God.
So it's more than the special times. It's the everyday times with God that really speak to your kids. Hear more practical ways to strengthen your faith from Phil at FamilyMinute.org.
This is Franklin Graham. As news about the coronavirus seems to worsen, many people are feeling overwhelmed, anxious, even fearful. We want to help. At the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, we have a prayer line that's open 24/7. We have staff who would love to speak with you, pray with you. Remember, God loves you.
Call 1-888-388-2683. That's 1-888-388-2683. Or visit billygraham.org.
American Family Radio newscasts are now available as a podcast.
I'm Rusty Pugh.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Didn't catch the full story? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Chris Woodward.
I'm Chad Groening.
Didn't have the radio on at the top of the hour? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Charlie Bunch.
And I'm Fred Jackson.
Get accurate news from a Christian perspective whenever you want it with the American Family News podcast. You can also sign up for our daily news brief. Visit onenewsnow.com.
Every day, babies in their mother's wombs are fighting for life, with abortion being the leading cause of death.
I already had my mind made up. I was like, I'm going to go through with it.
The Ministry of Preborn has pregnancy centers nationwide, standing by to help young moms in crisis choose life. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. By letting a mother see her baby in the womb and hear the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby.
I came seeking termination, but once I got here and I took an ultrasound, I was overjoyed when I found out that I was having three baby boys.
Preborn's mission is to help save babies' lives and souls. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
So Brian asked me, why aren't more of these conservatives raising constitutional issues? I just think, frankly, that most politicians are either not that conversant with it and just don't think it's that important. I mean, maybe they just consider it sort of an intellectual exercise to talk about the Constitution. But folks, it is the lifeblood of our liberty. It's written, according to its own words, to secure the blessings of liberty. So they need to, a lot of these politicians really do need to get a clue as to just who we are. And think about the incongruity of this. You arrest a 19-year-old girl. They didn't arrest her. Let me correct that. But you fine her $200, I think $205 to be exact, for being out in her car alone. But abortion clinics can operate without any restriction whatsoever. And people can get in their cars and drive to the abortion clinic to kill babies. And that's really not a problem. Yeah, something's very, very wrong with that picture. You've been very patient. Let's go to Jamie in North Carolina. Jamie, welcome.
Thank you so much, Bishop. There is just a plethora and a wealth of stuff. Americans really need to really concede to, not concede to, but mentally. Really, this country is run by a severely unbalanced scale of wealth, which all the time Jesus denounces. You just read when he was on this earth, what did he say? He said, go sell all you have and follow me. Always, every example, he says to humble yourself. And really in this country, we are just a giant marionette being controlled by the super wealthy, and it will always be. Our constitutional rights have been eroded from the very beginning, and that's just, and you know, I don't mean to sound bad, but the next time you go to your supermarket to look for toilet paper, look for the Constitution there, because that's about as good as it gets, you know?
Wow. Okay. All right, Jamie. Well, look, thank you for the call, Jamie. We appreciate it. Look, you're right. I mean, because we are a free country, people develop wealth. But let's face it, that's really more an indication of the nature of the character and culture that we've allowed to develop in our country. Because, you know, Jesus, when asked about that very parable that you mentioned, I mean, not parable, but that very incident that you mentioned, that was not a parable, that really happened. But when he was asked by his disciples, well, how can anyone enter the kingdom of heaven? And he explained that wealthy people have a hard time getting in because they trust in their riches. They trust in their riches. And somebody, I think I'm coming up to a call, is going to ask me, what's the motive of Bill Gates? I think that people can get God complexes because they're highly successful. They really think they're superior to other human beings, or they wouldn't have all that they have. And they don't realize that having some kind of gift or talent for accumulating money doesn't make you morally superior, doesn't make you spiritually superior, doesn't give you greater wisdom. In fact, sometimes you get dumber and dumber as you rely more and more on your ability to manipulate things with money. So, yeah, you're right. It's an inherent problem with a free enterprise system, but it really goes to the character of the people and what they choose to do with their money. Let's go to John in Tennessee. John, welcome. John, you are on.
Okay, Brother Jackson, yeah. Brian Fisher, he's going to know something about the education. I think he went to Stanford, he said. He was on several weeks ago. He was talking to – I heard his podcast. It was from this last Friday. He was talking to Dr. Dan Eichmann. He's had over 30 years as a doctor, and he's running a hospital in Indiana right now. He said how they're tabulating these, how many people die of coronaviruses. And he said the what it is, a lot of the older ones, they have a pneumonia and all different kinds of problems.
Right.
And then they die, but everyone that dies, no matter what they died from, they label it as coronavirus.
Yes. Yes.
Every time.
Yes. Look, I think you are absolutely right about that, John, and that's a problem. And I don't think some of this stuff is going to get unraveled until this thing begins to subside. Although you all are hearing that apparently New York has at least is experiencing a downturn in the number of hospitalizations and the number of deaths as of yesterday. And folks, forgive me for making too fine a point of this, but what was yesterday? The beginning of Holy Week. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's God saying, I'm still in charge. And if you really want an answer, you better turn to me. So thanks for the call, John. Appreciate it. Let's go to Joe in Arkansas. Joe, welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Bishop Jackson. Yeah, I wanted to first thank you for the excellent research and reporting you've been doing on this. You're one of the best voices on the radio that I've heard about the subject.
Thank you, sir.
I also wanted to say that it sounds to me like there's really no good reason we have to continue the lockdown at all, because this hydroxychloroquine, from the reports I've heard, it has a cure rate of something like better than 90%, which is as good a cure of anything it has ever been discovered. And so let the rest of us go about our lives, and whoever gets seriously sick with the virus, they can cure them with the hydroxychloroquine, and we can end this nonsense, I think. Sounds like to me. And
absolutely.
I say, but that idea is being suppressed by the media and the Democrat leaders, because I think they are collaborating with China to inflict as much damage as they can on this country with it. And also, the hydroxychloroquine sounds to me like it's a lot better than a vaccine, because I've talked to so many people that have got serious cases of the flu after they took the flu vaccine. So it sounds like, the hydroxychloroquine is a better cure than the vaccine is a preventive. And I just wanted to say one more thing.
Go right ahead.
The man that complained about the country being controlled by the rich, that's because we are not following our constitutional money system, where Congress coins and regulates the value of the money, but that's been given over to a privately owned central bank, the Federal Reserve, and that's why the super rich have accumulated so much more wealth than everybody else.
All right, Joe, that gets us into a whole nother subject, which I'd love to tackle sometime, but listen, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I think there's something to what you say there, too. I think our whole system of our whole monetary system is something that certainly needs to be looked at very, very seriously. And by the way, folks, isn't it ironic that the president's being accused of not having moved quickly enough, and yet when he shut down travel from China, they called him a racist. And this president talked about the coronavirus in his State of the Union message. And the first case we had here was January 15th. I mean, he was on it from day one. Now we've got what could be an answer to getting people cured of this thing, this hydroxychloroquine. And they're holding, oh, well, we don't know that, and we can't rely on that. And the president is trying to push forward ways of getting our country back to normal, and they're fighting him every step of the way. It is a bizarre situation. And you wonder sometimes when they're releasing prisoners and closing gun ranges. And by the way, folks, did you hear this? That some of the prisoners being released are violent sex offenders. But in order to make us safer, in order to make the prison safer, they're going to release them back into the streets. Wow. Let's go to David in Ohio. David, welcome.
Oh, hello, Bishop Jackson. Thank you for taking my call. I'm glad to hear you're doing all right, and I do appreciate your show. I just have a question about the notion that Bill Gates might be pulling the strings, and I was trying to follow it through. And I think, given that Bill Gates is a smart man, multi-billionaire, if we follow that idea, what would be his motivation for advocating for a nationwide lockdown, given that that would definitely cripple our nation's economy?
Well, David, we're almost to the end of the program, so why don't you tell us what you think real quick?
I have no idea. I do know that he's a liberal. I do know that he's a liberal and supports those ideas, but what would be the benefit of crippling our nation's economy?
Okay, listen, David, I'm going to take the next call, and I'll answer your question as I transition, but thank you so much for the question. Look, I think wealthy people can sometimes, not all, of course, not all, I'm not even suggesting that, but I think some do develop a kind of God complex. I think George Soros thinks he knows exactly how the world should be ordered. I think, frankly, Oprah Winfrey has suffered from some of that. And clearly Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, I think these guys get to and gals get to a point where they just think they just know more than everybody else. And if only everybody would just listen to them, the world would be a perfect place, even when their ideas are just, frankly, bat crazy. Forgive the pun. Let's go to John in Missouri. John, welcome.
Yeah,
John, you may be the last, but go ahead and try to get your point out quickly.
I hear you. My daughter-in-law works at a hospital. She works on the floor for COVID-19. And as of right now, they've got 50 patients, 30 who are on ventilators, and 20 are still waiting for the results of the test. And our local testing site in our county where we live, I went by there yesterday, just drove by there and didn't even realize it was there, and there was nobody there. It was empty. And Missouri is on a lockdown as of today.
So now, I missed something. What was empty? What? Nobody was there? Where?
Our county testing site.
Oh, and so what you're saying is they should be doing lots and lots and lots of testing because the whole state is on lockdown, and you're saying they're not?
Yeah, there was nobody there.
It was empty. John, thanks for the call. Well, look, folks, there are a lot of unanswered questions here, and I think our job is to keep posing the questions. And here again, every death is tragic. We don't want anybody to get sick. We pray for everybody. But look, I still do believe this, folks. The very best vaccine I know of is the blood of Jesus Christ. You know, I am believing God for my complete health and safety and security, and yours too. So remember this, folks. I don't care what the Chinese communists or anybody else throw at us. We cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.